afternoon, and welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. And you're listening to Tickling the Belly of the Beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz. And I'm Janaea, your host. And with me this afternoon is Tiger Windwalker. And I call him the Journey of the Big Sur Mystic. And he is the author of Walk in Beauty. And co-hosting with me is Sandra O'Leary, and we're going to be talking about what it is to trust life. And in his book, he writes, "To walk in beauty means to trust life. As we are transparent and vulnerable, the healing comes. As we are open and available, we are graced with magic and beauty. As we become empowered by our journey, we discover our truth and our voice. As we experience the interconnectedness of all things, we find the heart that is at the center of all creation. As we find fulfillment, we sing out our praise and gratitude for the gifts of life." And I can honestly say that Tiger walks in beauty. Tiger, welcome.
Oh.
Aho.
And aloha. Is your microphone working?
It's on now.
Okay.
And Sandra, do you want to say hi? She's with us.
Should I move this over so that we...
No, there's another one there.
Okay.
We're getting set up here. Pardon us. Right now, I'm going to play a little bit of Carlos Nunez so we get set up.
Now, where will her, if I move this over here, we can both speak into it, right? Who's to say, who's to blame?
I'll be with you in a minute. Welcome to Tickling the Belly of the Beast, and Tiger is here, and it's springtime. He just returned from Hawaii, and will probably share with us a little bit about his experiences, and he's going to be talking about spring.
Thank you for inviting me here, Janaea.
You're welcome. I love having you with us.
It's Sandra.
He's been on before, and Sandra's with us as well.
Yeah. So, okay.
He's got his instruments, his flute, and is this a rattle?
Oh, that's a
that's
wand.
That's beautiful. A wand? Oh, my gosh.
All this little medicine.
Oh, we're going to have fun today.
Well, what I'm aware of is... do you hear me?
Yes, okay. Now I can.
I'm just aware of when I woke up this morning up in the Sierra foothills that it was full on spring. And so I guess I have my animated energy is... So I've caught spring fever again here. And as I'm getting into twilight years, I'm still not, I'm still prone to spring fever.
Well, you have such a youthful way about you and inner being that it doesn't surprise me in the least. You're very fiery. And I love the way that you, reading Walk in Beauty in your poetry, you embody what it is to really be present as a child is, be it your writings about your experiences in the Sierras, the mountains, and the volcanoes by the ocean.
Yeah.
Some of my favorites are about the trees and the sacred river. I'd love to have you share that with us.
Yes.
But right now it looks like you have another one.
Well, just by way of introduction, I always like to kick things off in a good way, not rush it too much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And basically one of the things that I really stand for, what I see my life, I'm standing for it because I've become it.
Mm-hmm.
As I've been true to my life and the challenges that have been set before me and the crossroads that I've arrived at and made choices about and diverged, I see that integration is mm-hmm. one of the most profound essentials of my life. That my mm-hmm. well-being, my happiness, in large part, is measured by how I'm integrated into my life, which means the balancing of the opposites, so to speak, the polarities,
mm-hmm.
the duality of life. This realm that we live in is a dualistic realm.
Mm-hmm.
It has a top and a bottom. They go together, a left and a right, and, you know, up and down, and a good and a bad. That gets us into a lot of problems there. Well, all these things are moving all the time in a dynamic way, as if you were to watch a snake moving across the desert. Mm-hmm. The undulation, the life force energy, the prana, the yin and mm-hmm. the yang, is in a dynamic expression in all these realms, the ups, mm-hmm. the downs, the ins and outs, the happinesses and the sadness, moving all the time in a majestic...
Different aspects.
Yes, it's in a majestic circle, a mandala of mm-hmm. life that's pulsating. It's interesting when you take a look at the picture of impregnation inside a woman,
mm-hmm.
you'll see this wonderful circle, this mandala, 400 million sperm all like tails dancing around, and one makes it in there. And but once that has happened, the mm-hmm. union of the male and the female, then life becomes very profound for us. So for me, the union of my male and female, that's a process of impregnation into my consciousness and into my the way I walk,
mm-hmm.
the way I walk my path, the manner in which I walk it. So,
and that's continually growing within you, shifting, changing.
Yes, but my consciousness, there's a quality of consciousness where it's one-pointed. Where is my consciousness? So even though the contents of my consciousness or the edges of it that are bristling with expression and exploration and spring fever, that's one thing. But the sense of I, the sense of me being the observer, even without the me, the observer, that's constant all the time. So mm-hmm. it's interesting how when we look at polarities and dualities that we constantly have to make amends and take the opportunity to see that this is a holistic dynamic that's going on. It's a partnership. When you start looking at the partnership between the polarities, mm-hmm. that this is a partnership, and through our consciousness and our sensitivity and our love, we can wield these interactions into something that is called is a partnership, mm-hmm. that helps us move along more easily and move along with our own integrity. That's when we're looking at what it means to be integrated. Okay, go ahead.
I'm hearing you say the new way of the new way of acceptance would be you're doing partnering as opposed to the opposing, the opposition.
Yeah.
So when you like you say the up and the down and the in and the out and all of that, you know, we were always looking at those opposing each other, and now you're looking at them as a partnership.
Again, there would be a polarity, a spectrum there from partnership or relationship to aloneness. Mm-hmm. And I see aloneness as an important part, too. So this is what we got to get. It's just for now, whenever you're thinking something right now, think of its opposite and see where you are on the continuum.
On that spectrum.
Yeah, on that spectrum. Try to feel where you are on that. And because there are times when opposition is appropriate, that is one way we define ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That is, and what happens is the process of developing the hard definition of our personality, which is also our sovereignty, and it's also our when we what do they call it? You have to have good boundaries.
Mm-hmm. You know? Sometimes overly encased, though.
Yes. Well, and then we will develop good boundaries, so then we can loosen up, because then it's like a garden.
Mm-hmm.
When you plant a garden, like where I am, if I just plant a garden without any protection, the deer are going to come in, mm-hmm. and they're going to wipe it out overnight.
Sure.
Or the gophers will come from underneath, you know, and even birds will come down and pick out sprouts. So for a garden to get, for someone to experience the fruit of a garden, it means that you have to take care of your garden. You have to protect it, mm-hmm. until it gets to
pull
be strong
out the weeds.
For instance, let me just read the back of my book. It talks a little bit about this. Tiger's new way of living is to transform the poison soil of conditioning and ignorance into a garden sanctuary of the soul. From this place, small and fragile intimations of sacredness can grow unfettered into authentic expressions of grace and wisdom.
Very well said.
Yes.
You said a mouthful here. All right, the poison soul of conditioning. That's our conditioning by our society at large, our family. And it doesn't necessarily have to be poison, but it can be to the soul's purpose, possibly, and often it is. So that involves a lot of shedding as we continue to grow and find that place inside of ourselves that mm-hmm. truly is in touch. And I see it with what I call it, the great mystery creator.
Yes.
Is this what you're saying?
Yes. So the metaphor for the garden is really captured there. And springtime is when we plant our gardens. So what would we intend for this year? You know, this year is the year of the tiger.
It is.
Yeah.
What can you say about that?
Well,
and that's you.
I would just say it in my own. If I'm a tiger, this has got to be a good year. And it's a metal. It's the metal tiger, so it's yang. So basically, what I would think that means is being aggressive, moving toward our heart's desire, what we really want. Changes that we want to make, being aggressive, being demonstrative in that way, knowing that we're having effect, you know, taking action. Yeah.
Yes, and a part of my that this is the year that those energies are most powerful And yet there is there's this duality within me wanting to push forward my desires until I quiet myself and listen to what is the desire of possibly the Creator as
I
begin to explore. That's just, that is how I try to walk. I often fall short of it. And I was raised Quaker, it is about being of service.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm feeling, I want this, I want that, there's a whole different energy that can be really fun and spirited and yet exhausting, and I can influence other people negatively because it becomes my desire.
Mm-hmm.
Others have their desires as well. I can steamroll.
Well, you're giving me a wonderful opportunity now to integrate the polarities. Because, in fact, the year of the tiger is about that. It's yang energy. But what I think this year is about is listening, which you just said.
Mm-hmm.
When we are in touch with who we are, and our senses are fully deployed and active, scintillating in their sensitivity, then we can listen to what the moment is bringing. And we can respond to the intimations of our own destiny.
Yeah.
It's like before the bow of a ship cuts through the water near you, you will hear the rumble of the engine long before it gets to that place that in the moment the bow cuts through the water. And that is the leading edge of our experience of the moment. I've been on boats before, and I go hang up at the bow, and I just look down, and I see the waters being parted, and I see the bubbly froth, and yet, in an instant, that moment slipped away into another moment.
Mm.
And the moments keep emerging, keep recreating themselves, and the bubbles are all the same, and the division is the same, but it's all different in every given moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, the intimations of our destiny, or let's say we are as sensitive instrumentation, if we allow ourselves, if we clear the space, our instrumentation is sensitive enough that we can detect an earthquake before it comes. Just like dogs can, just like the big tsunami in...
Sri Lanka, Indonesia?
Yeah, I'll tell you a story about that.
All the animals escaped?
Yes, the animals, and of course there was hundreds of thousands of people that died there on that. And the researchers and stuff, they were monitoring some really isolated islands in the Indian Ocean where indigenous people were living, the primitives.
Mm-hmm.
And they were concerned about them. So somewhat after the tsunami broke, they went and visited those islands. And they found out that not one of the people had been killed. Because what had happened is that they were so tuned in that they had presentiments, they had intimations, they had their animal allies to listen to, and whatever else reached out to speak to that really highly refined consciousness that indigenous people have.
Mm-hmm.
Not one person lost their lives. They went to the higher ground. They knew it was coming. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, when I say that this year is about listening, the actions that we take in my book should come out of a place of deep listening. And that way, they become authentic. They become real. They become central to our core. We are in alignment. Not only are we integrated between listening and taking the tigerous action, but we're also in alignment in terms of the vibe, the grace, the movement of our life. We're integrated and we're aligned with we're reading the energies. So. What you said about this year being about, and I'm sure there's a little bit of your personality in there because you may not be a yang person, believe it or not.
I have yang.
Okay, well,
I'm Leo.
I'm a balance between yin and yang. I'm one of these guys that's got the highly developed feminine too, so I'm always aware of that. See, when you're really balanced, you're always aware of the movement.
I just find that when I personally spend time in nature, it is much easier to fine-tune that listening that you speak so well about. And when I'm working, rushing from one thing to another, exposed to television or talking, being with lots of people, just being out in the world, it's more difficult to go back into that quiet space. And the culture at large emphasizes that outward push, orientation.
Well, of course, that's why as a race, as a civilization, we're disconnected, if not schizophrenic.
Exactly. Yes.
So, you know, if you would, like, you know, you could pour more fire on the wound and it wouldn't ease the inflammation. What eases the inflammation is peacefulness and respite and withdrawal and retreat and, you know, dangling your feet in a cool stream somewhere.
Yes, yeah. So it's my medicine.
So this is the thing about the prognosis for the people. And I maintain that everything we need for our healing, our empowerment, and our sense of spiritual aliveness, spiritual connection, is already here, everywhere around us and deep inside. That's my slogan. If you sooner or later, you're going to see that if you go to my website, or you'll see that there. Let me say it again. Everything that we need for our healing, our empowerment, and our sense of spiritual aliveness is already here, everywhere around us, and deep inside. Deep inside. And if one was to embrace that truth, the very next breath would bring you to an evaluation of your responsibility in your life. The reevaluation would begin with taking responsibility for your life, not for Barack Obama's life or the oil corporations or all these bugaboos that are way out there that you can't touch and feel anyway. Your life.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are in spring. Here we are having some kind of fever. Who knows what that fever is? Some kind of intimations, some kind of urgings. Each person gets to look inside to listen. Well, you know you got to plant the garden because you don't have forever. But then there's that impulse that wants to pull back a little bit and still listen. Listen to the intimations because what you're going to do is develop your goals and your plans out of that deep listening. You know, the kind of garden that you want to cultivate and nurture.
Right.
You know, and it's got to be limited too. You know, it has to have some scope to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we can handle, okay? So, and basically, that's what I'm saying, is that as we take responsibility for our lives, and now maybe you don't want to believe what I said.
I'm talking out there.
Mm-hmm. I'll put it another way. It doesn't do any good blaming anybody else for what you lack or what you suffer in your life. It doesn't do any good.
Mm-mm.
Because in the bottom, whoever's right or wrong or whatever, however you want to talk about it objectively, it's always still your experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in any given situation, let's say if you're in a group and somebody says something, okay, or something happens, everybody's going to have a different take on it because we all experience with different priorities. I still start with the notion that the first step is to come home. To take responsibility, you also have to be inside.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, before you're willing to take a look at who you are and what you want and what you've done, you have to take the space for that inquiry to occur. And before that happens, you have to have stopped what you've been doing and there's a crosswords there, and you turn, and there's a choice. There's a moment that one begins that initiates that process mm-hmm. of taking a look, being mm-hmm. willing to slow things down and take a look. And then that whole process can begin. Now,
and it's an active discipline.
Well, of course. I mean, you want it to be aware. You want to mm-hmm. You want it to be conscious, okay? Mm-hmm. Although not sometimes our unconscious mind has the truth in it about us and will create circumstances that will yank us out of our illusions and bring us back home. So again, here I want to integrate again the conscious and the unconscious. The unconscious part represents our deep, represents the roots of our personality, of our consciousness, the roots that go deep in mm-hmm. the soil of our history and cellular memory. So mm-hmm. we want to, those guys that, the primitives, maybe those guys were so in touch that their thumb said go. The cells in their thumb said go to the top of the mountain. We're that complex of beings that we can have a conversation with all the aspects of who we are, mm-hmm. and it can make sense, and mm-hmm. it can help us. I feel that there are significant changes coming for us, that the changes that have Nostradamus and other people have predicted that haven't emerged. Mm-hmm. They seem to have been delayed or whatever. Some people say it was all, all just a myth anyway. I do believe mm-hmm. that the real changes are coming within the next few years, and that it's really important for us to listen so that we can know where it is mm-hmm. that we want to be, who it is that we want to have around us, mm-hmm. and to make sure that we have a source of water and a source mm-hmm. of sustenance. I believe that's an important set of skills, just like the primitives, to develop. And these are skills of listening that are part of who we are. It's part
of
our makeup.
How do you cultivate it yourself?
I'm going to digress a little bit here uh-huh. and tell you a little about how I used to be. When I was a kid, I was extremely damaged goods. I was shut down so that I couldn't communicate. I had no friends. I had, because of my religious upbringing at that time, I had been kicked out of class every day because my religion said you couldn't. This is back in the 50s, so I was kicked out every day from class.
Harsh.
And I had to
brutal.
Look at the, I had to be with the stares and the looks and the antipathy and the hatred of people as I, no words needed to be said. So as I walked out the room, I had to endure that. But the point was, when I was young, let's say like 10 or 11, I was very messed up. And I was in a household where I had a mother who was like, she was like, she had red hair and she was like double Italian mocha latte, whatever.
Oh, dear.
And she would go on the warpath and she would have it into for my dad. And, I'm telling you, and then she would drink too.
You speak it like you're living it almost.
Well, I want to tell an authentic story.
Oh boy, I can.
Maybe I don't have to embellish because this was the real thing, folks. But
yeah.
Anyway, what I would do is I would leave, and I was raised in Los Altos Hills on the orchards. So I was as a kid, that's where I got my sense of purpose and responsibility. I was pruning trees when I was 8 years old and stuff. But I would leave, and I would go out over the rolling hills, and I'd go sit under a walnut tree somewhere, or I'd go up and to some other favorite trees I had, or go in the creek, or just walk. And And I would do that to just find some sanity in the midst of, you know, when the guns were brought out, you know, figuratively speaking, I didn't want to be in the war. So I left the war zone. And, you know, I didn't realize until later. But now realize I'm damaged goods, right? Okay. And I'm having a real hard time being social and having friendships and stuff. So what happened is, as I grew, you know, and went into my 20s and late 20s, and, I recognized that I needed to do some healing work. At the same time, I was very comfortable with being out in nature. Mm-hmm. It was almost like I was being prepared before. Mm-hmm. And at some point, I had a realization that I could make nature one of my ally in remembering who I really was. And also make her an ally in being able to go through a healing process. Mm-hmm. First, it was the healing process. I got comfortable enough and quiet enough that I saw, I felt inside that I could trust nature to be my counselor, okay, my healer. And guess what? It worked. And I have many stories I could tell about that.
So you must have spent long periods of time by yourself out in varieties of nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, vision questing.
Really familiarized.
And the times that were perhaps most graphic and vivid were the times when I was suffering from a death, you know, either symbolic death or death of a relationship, or and then I would end up, I should read that poem about the beach for you.
I'd love to hear.
Yeah, that's a healing poem. But I'd be out there and I'd be just totally crying and totally, you know, involved, catharting. And I realized that where I was, you know, nature was my ally. She said, give it to me. Mm-hmm. Okay? Just give it to me. The ocean would say, give it to me. When I struck a match and I wanted to use that element, you know, the fire ocean said, I'll burn it for you. I'll consume it for you. Or the air on the top of the mountains, because I have eagle in my
in
my medicine wheel. You know, I felt what it's like to fly, to let it go to the wind and to fly and to feel free. And then the earth, too. There's nothing more powerful than to something you don't want.
Right here.
Dig a hole and bury it. And give it back to Mother Earth. Let her recycle
any negativity or stress. Carry around a little black stone. I thank Creator for the beauty of the earth represented in this beautiful black stone.
Yes.
I carry it with me all the time. I know exactly what you're talking about.
So, Sandra, do you want to say something too? Because we can.
Well, I'm just watching you, and listening to you. It permeates. It definitely permeates the whole room. And I love it when you say that you did, out of desperation, that you recruited nature. And you said, come be my friend and just come be with me. And I love that about how you learned more about... where there was a safe place for you to be you, and I hear a lot of acceptance as well, lots of acceptance. Mm-hmm. This is perfect for me to hear today. Again, no accidents.
No.
Cindy led me here today, so.
Yeah. Good. Jania.
Oh, okay.
You can say Cindy.
Thank
Cindy
you.
Janea.
Now the authorities know who to consult.
Thank you.
Now, is that my level still good?
Can
you hear me?
Right. Okay. Yes, I can hear you. Sandra just need to get a little closer.
Okay.
So can I take off? Can we go a little few more steps with this?
Yes.
Okay, so this is what I submit to you, listening audience. If I was carrying that baggage, I wonder about your baggage. Because what I started to realize as I started to flip the pages on the trauma of my life, my scrapbook, and as I experienced, all re-experienced the feelings and some of the ones that repressed because I couldn't in that moment experience them, as I flipped those pages and I started to see them like leaves lift up out of the book and be carried by the wind away from, my book got light and my mind got clear. It's from that place of clarity, from being on the other side of the healing journey, and I want to say that it's not just about healing, but that's a good place to begin when you're taking responsibility for your load. Anybody who says it's too heavy for me here, you're carrying the load from the other side of that.
Start to lighten it.
And from the other side of that, I realize that the clarity, the lightness, the peacefulness, our capacity to listen, those are the things that truly are who we are. That those are the constituents, the very basic core constituents of who we are. Anybody who's ever been around dolphins who are our peers and maybe beyond us in terms of intellect and whatever, consciousness.
I love your poem about the dolphins as well.
The dolphins will show you how reaction or response can happen instantaneously. Instantaneously and in a group. All moving to the right at the same time. All changing and morphing their personalities and their expression all at the same time, or they can do it individually. They can split off and go individually. I've had it many times where one will split off and come with me for who knows, some affinity, some attraction, and we'll play together. And I'm just have to visualize now me diving down under the water with all my snorkel gear on and interacting with a dolphin maybe 20 or 30 feet down. And it's actually I've done ballet dances with them down there because they swirl and spiral and they go over on their bellies. And yes, and they will do it with you if you've been chosen that day. You know, hopefully if you've done enough clearing of yourself, making the space available, you're more available to life.
Okay. Yes.
So,
where is the space in the midst of...
To be more available to life and to get the richness of life means that we have to necessarily go through some kind of
shedding the baggage.
Yeah, a clearing process, a healing process.
Step number one.
Yeah. So, can I read this poem?
Which one?
On the Edge.
Yes, and I have some others I want to address as we go on.
All
absolutely.
Right. Now, I just want to say that I said it's more than just healing because I try to weave beauty, the beauty into it too, because beauty has been my partner everywhere I've ever gone in these journeys. Beauty has been there, so I make her my partner. She's my other half, you know. So whatever I write, you will always find beauty in there too. And walking with us, though. This is called On the Edge. Like sand on the beach, I await the tidal flow of your love. Still, prone, stretched in the wind and sun, I am quiet, pensive, and yet available. I know that soon your frothy coldness will wash over me again to inundate me, to suck at me, to bubble and gurgle around me. In your ebb and flow, my grains collide and separate. Only the sandpipers will witness this, but they will be too busy probing my fringes for dinner to notice our passion. I love the way your waves smash me and rearrange me and clean me and throw interesting treasures of wood, shell, and feather upon my nakedness. This is the jewelry with which you have adorned me for countless eons, twice a day since always we have met like this, and never have our meetings been repetitious.
Lovers must walk this place, and so too philosophers, poets, and people with wounds. Children, surfers, and dog lovers walk and run here too, all of them healed in one way or another in our meeting, our passion, our freshness.
What an example of your intimacy with the ocean. So evident, thank you.
I had an experience several years ago, and I had gone through a breakup, and I was devastated and was working at the same time. And fortunately, my assignment for the day was, I was in Southern California, to go sit at this ocean house and wait for people to come and hook up the, you know, the utilities, etc. And so I walked out while waiting and put my feet in the ocean. And that's where I took some of my incredible, intense sadness and crazy mixed-up head. And I stood there and just poured myself into the ocean. And as I did that, I noticed whatever I was going through became lighter and was literally cut in half. And I remember thanking the ocean and forever, loving it more than ever for the joy it brought me, for the healing. And I just always knew that the water in my soul and the water in my life, we're going to be married forever, so to speak. And so thank you for bringing that to the surface again and my bringing up and my recall. Yeah.
Thank
well,
you,
those
Sandra.
Those transformative experiences that we have where we know that something shifts and it makes a difference in us, and that's why we come back for more. So, you know, I would like to see more people have this. And at some point I want to invite you to come on a walk in beauty with me so I can show you how this is, or I can facilitate you or assist you in having this kind of experience. We all have our agendas, and if we didn't, if our agendas were done, then we could just be in an open space and it would be very joyful whatever we did. But I assure you that nature in that that kind of a place of abandon is very joyful and peaceful and regenerative. But somewhere down later in the program, I want to make this specific that I would like to take a group of people out so they can have this kind of experience. And it can be whatever it is. We make room. Somebody has to go and walk on in the ocean and cry a while, and that's where we're going to go. We're going to go to the ocean.
Make the allowance.
Yeah. They can have that experience for them, and they can use that element in their healing process. Somebody else may want to sit up on a bluff of grass. Just watch the grass blow in the wind. This is where I'm going to take people there to Año Nuevo, and this is what's there. Okay.
Just the whole coast.
Yeah. So at some point, we can come back to that. So, because I want you to know that the integration comes all the way up to the point of me offering what I can do to help. Because that's where I have surrendered my life. Okay?
Yeah, I know that about you.
And everybody can arrive at this place too, and it starts in a very simple way. That day that forever, whatever reason, you say, I'm just going to trust what happens and watch what comes. That is the day it can begin. I have had so many experiences like that. Those experiences are the beads on a necklace that Great Spirit has woven for me that I put around my neck.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, I tied the clasp. And I wear that trust with me, and that's what I call a life of faith. Not a life that has been that's come out because of beliefs that I have or because of scriptures or anything. A life that has emerged, an understanding that has emerged when I have been in total surrender, sometimes involuntary. And I say, let me trust this moment and see what happens. That's with money, that's with healing, emotions, it's with relationships, you know, my own growth, my expression, over and over again. I have chosen that. And now there is a boldness behind it. Okay? Mm-hmm. There's a courage.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to have more people on the planet that were like that. Because of their trust and openness, there is now a courage to live in an unfettered way. In a way of true freedom.
Mm-hmm.
True expressing, allowing the wings of our soul to spread out. And the problem is, most people have taken the wings of their soul and wrapped them around their heart for protection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how can you fly when you are so heavy with your own woundedness and trauma?
Mm-hmm.
When the work has been done and the heart has been cleared, it's a natural thing that the wings will extend out and we can fly and we can know our spirit nature on earth. Heaven on earth. That's what I stand for.
Mm-hmm.
Spiritual embodiment. That's what I stand for. And this place here is so beautiful. I had to make it the title of my book. This place here is not only so beautiful, but the beauty can set us free. The beauty can heal us. The beauty can help us find the right place because we're no different. Everything I see as I look around, the wings of a butterfly, the shape of the clouds, the way the tree holds onto the rock down in Big Sur, the way the waves come in, the ripples on the river going out into the bay, all of those things, I finally had to turn around and look and say, well, what about you? I must be this too. All right? I must be this too. So, and that is the truth. So as we do that and be attentive to those kind of things, we get so clear and open that we can then deploy our wings from the protective mode, and then there we are. We can fly.
And create and dance all aspects. Do you want to play one of your flutes there? I've been eyeing it.
All right.
I'm at the moment in kind of a reverie with all that you're sharing.
Yeah.
And I would love to hear some music to be with that kind of literally float.
I think what I'm going to do is just take those off while I do this and hopefully they're...
Oh, the headphones,
I'll just put them on in a minor way. And then you might watch the controls to see if we're getting blown out here, too.
Or I can, orange.
I can come back. I can go back. Or come forward.
Sure.
Okay.
I'll let you know.
Hmm.
Oh.
That is a song of melancholy that...
I can feel the sadness.
This is in our emotionally or in a way of a tune, this represents that healing path.
Mm.
And I was... a lot of my songs just come when I'm out in nature. And I remember that one came, it wasn't like the bright little bird. And I had these little, it's not, the Irish lilting tune. And I said, well, what's that? And I said, well, that's me. And that's where you're coming from. You have to traverse that part. You have to go through that part. And it's actually a part of who we are, that melancholy is an aspect of who we are. All the emotions, the beautiful variegation, the subtleties, mm-hmm. it's like the plumage of a wonderful bird. And we have all that in us. And what I know is that the song moves on.
Mm. From there.
The breath behind the notes doesn't stop. And as we're true to how we are feeling in the moment, we move on. We move on without impediments and without, chains. So being able to tell the truth and just be in the moment, being full and complete with our expression, how it is, then it's over. In that moment, we've been total. Now we move on to the next thing. Oh, wow, what was there? Yeah, we were talking.
You've allowed it to bring its message, so to speak, so that you can release cathartic.
And for me, playing that, I only play this beautiful. To myself. So now I've shared it with other people. I think it's the first time I've shared this. So I share this to the people who are hurting. And what I want to say, I was thinking when I was coming in the car, I'm not. This is not just poetry. And people want to know about me. But, it's a book of poetry. No, it's not. It's an inspirational book. That's what I'm standing for. Remember I told you I was shut down?
Yes.
I was wounded goods? Mm-hmm. I'm not like that anymore. Yeah. I have friends, loyal friends, that would do anything for me. And I cultivate that.
Yeah.
And because it was something that I lacked, I appreciate it even more because I hung out so far on that side of the polarities, being the loner, being shut down, having the hostility there, But I was there so long, so it's imprinted me really strongly with that recognition that now that I'm on the other side that I didn't know I had in me. So... what do you have in you, listening audience, that you are not even aware of, but is something, a gift and a benediction and a beauty? The intimations could be there, tickling you somewhere at the base of your being, inviting you to make a journey and an exploration. So I'm
the
here.
The medicine becomes your strength.
Yes. So I'm here to basically say, down in Big Sur when I do my, I'm going to have my book signing on May 15th at Henry Miller.
That's the library?
Yeah, the Henry Miller Library at 1 o'clock, went 1 until 5.
Great.
And I entitled it, because I'm a little quippish, I said, Local Boy Makes Good. Local Boy Makes Good. And it's like, and it really...
I don't want to know what good means.
Well, but, it's just a saying, But it's really... for me, it's really true that I really found my own goodness. I'm not hampered and hamstrung by my own old woundedness that made me so tremendously, put me so much inside, made me so introspective. And I'm out now that I
now
can share.
To share what I am you to, learned
I'm
in
to
that
share,
whole process.
And I'm to share. And as I open up and take that trust and say, okay, I'm ready, Great Spirit, I'm ready to put another. Bead on my necklace, and the Great Spirit says, well, son, let's see if you can swallow this pill. So like in Hawaii, I got laid out for 2 weeks flat on my back.
That's what you you called, you told me about that,
and
you're so physical and agile.
Mm-hmm.
I can only imagine
there's a combination of things, but part of my process was because I knew this book was coming out and I was taking steps to become more public and more out there, get my name known, get my word out, and whatever. Let me tell you, it's a process. I had asked the Great Spirit and the Mother, I had asked, what is there anything else that I need to clean up before I'm an appropriate vessel? I'm an appropriate vessel for you, because as I trust and surrender,
you're getting pushed to go
right.
out. You're out of the nest now.
I don't know whose breath is coming through one. I really don't. And it actually doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because there is a point where I can just let my fingers go, and that's how I get my songs. See, but now if I'm going to work with people, and I'm going to come out and say, you may be feeling like crap today, but really you're a special being there, and can you have some kind of hope and optimism that this day will pass? Can you play your sad song in your own way until it's complete and full, and drop your tears into the Mother Ocean? And can you wait and see what this evening will bring? Well, this evening that's going to have Venus conjunct Mercury off in the western sky, for those people who can get the view. It's very beautiful, Venus and Mercury together. So, that's... And what happened was, oh my goodness.
And why are you seeing it in that way? And what does that signify for you?
Mm-hmm. But anyway, I got laid out because there was something there to be cleared out. And, in some old vestiges. And, so what happened, and I recognized that this injury then became a vision quest, because I was laying on my back for 2 weeks in a bed. And, all I could do was track my experience in the moment. And at one place where I was for a week, I finally recognized, I kept seeing these flashes of orange. I was laying in this bed, and behind me there were these three big windows with shades on it, and then one on the side. And I kept seeing these flashes of orange, and I'm saying, what is that, And the second to the last day before I left there to go to another hospice somewhere where I could continue to rest,
You mean a respite of sorts?
Yeah, a respite.
You weren't in hospice.
Well, there's part of me that died, so that's why
you're calling it hospice.
Yeah. So I looked up there and I realized that this is the this plant was a butterfly bush. And when I looked up for the first time, here I am, when are you going to get it? It's your seventh day now. Look up, of course, look up over your pillow, look up out through the window. And I saw the caterpillars all stuck to the bottom of the leaves. And up above those, the monarch butterflies were flying around. And and you know what? It's prophetic, because I wrote it in my book somewhere. And I'll just see if I can find it.
About that experience or about...
Oh, no, it's an aphorism. Here it is. Before the butterfly, the dreaming cocoon. So I had written that, and then I'm laying in the bed, and I'm all of a sudden, my God, this is metamorphosis, Tiger. And not only that, you wrote it in your book prophetically for yourself.
Can you share it with us?
I just did. Mm-hmm. That was it. Before the butterfly...
Oh, that was the one about the
ocean. Dreaming cocoon.
It.
Yeah, that was
one
it.
Oh, right.
That was it. and I said, well, where do these things come from, After laying in bed for a whole week and not being able to move, not being able to sleep, I saw the power of my own words, whoever coined them, See? So now I can speak very authoritatively about this little snippet here.
Before the butterfly.
Yeah. The cocoon and the butterfly. And I never realized how painful that was. Do you know what happens to a caterpillar when it goes in the chrysalis?
I can only imagine. I don't know the specifics,
I can tell you scientifically what happens. It's instructive. So...
What happens?
The caterpillar... Spins the chrysalis.
Yeah.
Is it inside there? And the caterpillar dissolves into goo inside.
That's right.
Okay. But what happens is there is a matrix or a network of cells that are linked together that are called, scientists call those imaginal cells.
Oh.
So in this place
of dissolution,
and in that place of dissolution and whatever, mm-hmm. surrender, there's still an intelligence there that formed an imaginal network, and around these imaginal cells, around that network, the new being is formed, the butterfly. So the caterpillar and the butterfly share that in common.
Yeah.
The caterpillar, of course, when he's out and he's ambulatory, he's looking up and said, boy, I wish I could be one of those, you know, just to feel free and be above everything, you know, and not, and being able to suck rather than chew. I'd really like to suck. You know, give me a straw, you know. You know, a caterpillar cannot ever, except in the most subtle intimations in that imaginal network, mm-hmm. know that he could become a butterfly.
And it's automatic.
So, yes, and then, and of course, that bolstered me, and I felt, whoa, thank you, Great Spirit, because Great Spirit and Mother Earth, they leave telltale signs when you live a life of trust. It's not just that there's, you know, nothing
you
there.
You know what to look for.
Amorphous, and, you know,
you're
woo-woo.
Not just locked into this room somewhere.
No, they throw you right down under a butterfly bush and let you hang out for a week, straight flat on your back, tracking,
weren't
until you realize
pain,
that this is the initiation. That this was the sacred bush under which you're having the initiation. And again, another big bead goes on the necklace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Some of us will only have a few beads. But my invitation is out there. You want a few more beads? I'll walk with you.
Mm-hmm.
I'll walk with you while you mm-hmm. trust, while you're open and vulnerable. What did I say here?
You certainly were vulnerable in that pain.
But I said here, from this place, small and fragile intimations of sacredness can grow unfettered into authentic expressions of grace and wisdom. So we do need to have sanctuary. We do need to have allies, protectors for us as we go through our changes, our metamorphosis. We need to have that.
Mm-hmm.
And the certain people have to volunteer. And I've gotten worked over a lot. I've had to walk into the fire a lot to be ready to do this. I've had to work on my breath a lot to let go of my own breath and let another breath come through, you know, which is no different from my breath. So where we're going, our connection with spirit, with mm-hmm. creator, it's no different than who we are. Mm-hmm. We're just fighting like hell not to acknowledge it. Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's the last thing you want to hear, okay? And then you tell me I have to take responsibility for it. You see? So I think the spiritual...
And but it behooves one to get it sooner because it is ultimately the truth. And without that practice, it's going to continue and it's going to get worse.
I must confide in you. I was
I
so old
takes
when I got
interest.
It. I would gladly.
You were so old?
Yes.
You're not that old.
Oh, it was forever.
Tiger.
You don't know how many years, 30 years I paid for groups and for counselors. Because I was smart enough to, I was tuned in enough to know at a feeling level that I wasn't ready yet, that I wasn't clear yet, mm-hmm. and I knew that. And I said, how much longer? How much more money do you want? How many more counselors? How many more therapists? How many more, you know, rough and tumble sessions out in the wilderness? You know, and I think it was old for me to get that. I would gladly, if I could write a ticket out for somebody to get it 10 years earlier, I would gladly do that. But you know what? I think it comes when it comes.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. you know, and I think our lives are just long enough that we can get to a place where, here, let me read you another
Some
poem.
Never make it, though. You might say they die prematurely, but...
Well, that's right, but there's many lifetimes, you know, and that... You
but
know,
there's a certain...
Yeah, there are many lifetimes, and sometimes we have to let go of those folks Here, listen to this poem. This is called The Tree of Life. Because you're so tall, find the depth that will balance you by sending your roots down into the earth. Keep dreaming while feeling your dark and fertile core. Because you're so tall, reach a little higher so that you can get your nose just over the edge of the banquet table in heaven, which has been laid by kings. Bring back the message of what you've seen. Because you're so tall, feel the current within you that vibrates as potential between the yearning tendrils of rarefied soul and the thick trunk of embodied existence. Let that power pulse between your poles of inspiration and gratitude. Because you're so tall, pick the fruit that has grown in your tallest branches. Taste its sweet succulence. Then fall to your knees in humility, offering the seeds of compassion to small holes that you have dug with your own loving hands. Because you're so tall, know that your triumph is more than beating the storm. The raging wind has made you strong and is now part of you, like the rings that girdle your trunk. Your peace against all odds is the serenity of an ancient forest.
Oh my, that's just lovely. Absolutely lovely.
I know.
Yes.
It brings me to a place, camping late at night, thinking I was alone, actually welcoming it that time, and hearing a howl, not sure where it was from. And then I heard a growl, like something was being eaten. And I looked around, and I saw shadows. This was a Chaco Canyon.
Ooh.
And the wind picked up. And I thought to myself, I heard stories about this on that little tour we took. I was quite young and thought, what is it? And I just kept listening to the wind. And then I was shown, as I slept, I dreamt about the wee folk that went up the trunks of the tree. And they connected the heavenly realms with what was going on underneath. Had much to share. They asked me to put my head against the tree trunk and then listen deep to the earth in the morning as I walked, but I was young and everybody was asking me to hurry up, and I kept hearing thumps underneath the ground. Someone says, just the squirrels, they make a lot of noise. And I said, no, there's a lot more out here. Someday they're still here, Mom, look. And she was mortified. We're getting out of here as soon as we can. But that poem brought, that's how I felt listening to your poem. It brought me right back. Almost like a totem pole. The trees were all like totem poles. That was beautiful. Thank you.
Yes, it was. Trees have a magnificence, but to me, they've got such magic energy that oftentimes I am just led to go up and touch the trunk. I don't even know why. I just know that I need to and want to, and I touch it, and it just makes me smile. And on one trip to Yosemite with a bunch of friends, we went on this hike one day. Actually, it was down on the floor, but anyway, we went to this one exhibit where they had taken this huge, huge tree. And it was cut in half for us to see the size, try to get a grasp of the size. And then you could, of course, look at all the rings. And it was, you know, as I stood next to it, it was much taller than me. And again, I had to put my hand out and touch it. And the tree started talking to me and sending vibrations to my hand, which I was not expecting. And before I knew it, it was shaking me to the core. And I sat there and cried. That was something I wasn't expecting, but often, I mean, I received it. I received it and received it.
I utterly respect to the guardians of some of these very precious sacred sites. I can almost sense them and see them. I look at a rock, and there's something a little different about the image on the rock or its beauty that strikes me, and I know to back off and truly respect it and go in slowly with reverence and almost and permission.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's very much alive, and people can deny it. It's a fact, like photosynthesis happens, whether you believe it or not. It's there. Do you have another poem for us, Tiger?
I do. I'm working up to telling a story, but I want to read a poem to you. It's my wife's favorite poem. And when I was up in the Ebbets Pass off of Highway 4 up in the Sierras, I found a tree, and like so many of my trees are called Mother Tree, Grandmother Tree, or whatever. I found a tree that had was hollow, and I went and sat inside that tree, and it's actually a red fir, which was up about 9,000 feet or higher, and it had this most wonderful resin that was like, you know, high mountain frankincense or something, which I took a bunch, and I have it in my medicine bag. But I would go and sit in this tree, and the tree would, you know, I would say, I'm dying, and I'm in so much pain.
It takes the pain.
Yeah. And, you know, so she listened to me for a while, and then I was quiet, and then she said, let me tell you something. I have been in these mountains for so long, and I offered myself to the sky, and the lightning beings came and struck me and burned me over and over again and burned me in my belly until my belly dissolved and made a space for you. I said, now you know how much pain we've both had.
Oh.
So that was I got humbled there again, you know.
Yeah.
And that's a very special tree to me. So after that happened that day, I went back to my tent and I wrote this poem because I felt I got it. It's called Before the Altar. I come to make an offering to you, Almighty One. I am the incense on the altar of your love. Show me how I may be transfigured. I offer myself to the great flame of your love. Let your heart fire leap to me and catch me alight. I am burning now. My body is your incense. I release the fragrance that has been hidden inside, and the smoke of my prayer spirals to heaven in thanksgiving. My ashes drop to the table, and I await in emptiness for the breeze that will sweep me away into the service of your will. Thank you, Great One, for leaving nothing behind. In my selflessness, I wish only to leave the memory of a fragrance.
Amazing. What you just captured. You're truly one. You are with that tree still.
So now I want to, if I can,
it's essence. Go ahead.
I want to tell you a story I've never told anybody in the public. I've never told you this story. Anybody.
I'd love to hear it.
This story needs to be told. So this place that I was, that has the grandmother tree that's been burned out.
At Ebbets Pass.
That's Ebbets Pass. And up, it's right off the Pacific Crest Trail.
I
on how, okay. And up there, I've found many magical things. I found stone people that look like elephant seals. I found egg rocks that are emerging that have all kinds of very powerful symbolic import or portent, and many, many things I've experienced as I've explored this area. So over the years, I have done vision quests there too. This one time I was up doing a vision quest. It was in the summer, obviously. So I was doing a vision quest, and there were a lot of issues that came up about my mother. See, when I say I'm old, I'm getting really close to being 50 now, and I'm really wanting to get through this one. But there were some, I had some lingering questions, and so I was asking the spirit about that, and I was getting these wonderful responses that were very short and to the point, and I realized that somewhere my heart had been engaged, or I am engaged with a conversation or discussion at the level of heart, which, as I have come to know it, is a place where responses are one-liners. There's not people that speak from the heart, situations from the heart, can all be expressed simply. It's not a place of elaboration. Very simple. Because you're there in a feeling place, too. So, mm-hmm. You know, the feelings just get triggered, and you know right or wrong. Is this right or not? You at a feeling level, okay? And we can go and talk about that, too. But, so anyway, I'm there, and then I started looking around, you know, and I looked across and saw the elephant seal rock, which is, I never wondered, why would an elephant seal be living on top of the, you know, these are all volcanic formations, look just like an elephant seal. And I said, what's he doing out here? And of course, where I want to take people at Año Nuevo is where the elephant seal is. See, so this is how it is, you know, there are all these kind of connections and coincidences. Hints. That are not accidental. You can have the elephant seal on the top of the mountains, or mm-hmm. right down on the beach, see? So I'm sitting there and I'm looking around. All of a sudden I see black lightning. And I've never seen black lightning before. I said, ooh.
I haven't either.
And the clouds are coming in, and something's happening right over the mountains. And I saw this black lightning. And so instead of being inside, it came out of my being inside. And I'm still there in this heart space, but I came out, and I'm out. And I'm paying attention because, oh, black lightning, okay? And then I saw from the west these clouds that were like chariots, like heralds, started to come, all right above my head. And a big cloud formed right over my head, or just off to the side a little bit. Right above me, a big cloud formed. And all these chariot clouds converged on that cloud. And I felt something. Suddenly, my heart space became more magnified and more magnified. Mm. And I felt a presentiment, a presence to me that was something I never experienced before. But it was something that I wanted. Yeah. I wanted to be there. And what happened is, as I looked up to the cloud, it was as if a face on the other side of the cloud embossed itself into the cloud, so that I saw at the bottom of the cloud the face that was above it. Okay?
Oh, my word.
There was a face, and I saw the face, and then I saw the cloud start to form and to move out, and I saw an arm form. And it went across the third of the sky, and at the end, a hand formed, and in that hand was a hole. And at that point, I realized that I was having a visitation by the Christ consciousness.
Uh-huh.
Okay? I mean, it was absolutely clear.
It couldn't have been clearer.
Yeah. So visually, I got the confirmation, but on the inside, what I felt was something so extraordinary, so beautiful. And so from that place of having asked about my mother and having received a simple response, from that space now magnified, whatever, 50 times more, 100-fold, I was just present and available, and the energy, which I think was the Christ consciousness, mm-hmm. Told me, when you are like this, you do not need a book to make any kind of decisions. Let mm-hmm. your open heart guide you.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, that was the message.
Oh, Tiger. You
know, let your open heart. And I said, well, I got that very clear, you know. And I felt it. So, I mean, it became ingrained in my body. You know, I had the whole experience. I became embodied with that. And now, there was another person there who saw the same thing. Because afterwards, we said, did you see that? You said, yeah.
Did that person have a similar experience?
Yes, but perhaps not as profound as me. But the confirmation was the face
visual.
And the arm and the, you know, the hand with the hole in it.
Uh-huh.
And then, so, now, and I've taken, this was some years ago. It was good 15 years ago or 17 years ago that this happened. And, you know, I am not a Christian. So I was saying, well, why? This is really something that should happen to a Christian, right? I'm not a Christian, and I've asked myself why it was, and what comes back is because you are open and available. That's why it happened, and I was in the greater cathedral.
Is Christ? I mean, mm-hmm. I feel that my assessment of Jesus, my understanding of Jesus has been tainted because of, well, what I was exposed to as a child by some fundamentalist Christian neighbors. So it kind of turned me off to the beauty of the Christ consciousness. Mm-hmm. But just recently I was exhausted, not at all in an open space, and was dreaming, I guess, or had an incredible vision. In my dream, I was up in the earthly, heavenly realms amidst the clouds, and this figure came out and said, "Who are you?" And she said, "Mother Mary." She started telling me about the Bardos and the death realms, and I said, "Why are you telling me that?" And she said, "You work with these people." I said, "You know what? I don't know you. Am I going to die?" And she said, "No, you could, sure." I said, I have to wake up." And I said, "I don't know, Mother Mary. I'm not Catholic. I would like to see White Buffalo Calf Woman." And it was just this laughter, bone-chilling laughter. And she said, "You know, you're not even Cindy." And I said, "Sure I am, very much Cindy." So I kind of woke up, and then I felt this, like, heat. I closed my eyes, mm-hmm. and it was like this candle mm-hmm. going through my feet and up through the crown chakra. And I went, whoa, she was back. And I don't know what she said. She took me all over, and there was much more beyond that. And I
Mother Mary took you?
This divine, I don't know what it was, this consciousness.
Uh-huh.
And kept saying, "You are not Cindy Janea. Mm-hmm. You are much more than that."
Yes.
"We all mm-hmm. are. And mm-hmm. you've got to, your time, you've got to do more. You can do more. Mm-hmm. You will do more. You can be shown." And that guidance has since been there for me, and it's amazing how it's unfolded. And this was just 3 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of understanding what you're saying. And when these experiences happen, for me, initially, it was a bit frightening. And as I let it go and accepted it, I was a little shaky. Didn't want to share it with too many people at first. What's going on here? Just letting it be. It's a beautiful... Now I look back on it, and I feel very blessed. It was an incredible gift, and it continues to unfold. I imagine that may have happened with you.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that,
by the
way.
I wanted to get that off my chest. And I guess... Did you want to say something, dear?
No, I'm just saying that... when you share, it just seems to be igniting things within.
Yes.
They're going off in you.
This could be something like spring fever.
Yes, it could.
But yeah, that volatility is what? Go ahead.
Now, I just want to say that anyone just tuning in now, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM, and we are talking with mm-hmm. Tiger Windwalker, mm-hmm. and he's the author of Walk in Beauty. I really consider him my astrologer, mystic shaman sorts. You're just getting a taste of who he is here. And he is igniting.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And well, to be in his presence is even more so.
Mm-hmm. So we could say that our spirits are flammable right now.
Yes. And I'm holding a piece of sage here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, but we want that divine spark to come and ignite us, you know. And that it's divine because it ignites us into our own divinity, into the recognition of who we are, see. So...
But so much needs to be shed before that true recognition. Yes. You can get glimpses, as I have, but not... There's much cloudiness.
I want to say something about something that I don't hear talked about, and you'll rarely ever hear a man talk about it. But I want to say that some of the things that we most desire, if you take a look at them, are really feelings. They're not mental states. They're feelings. Joy, happiness, equanimity, even peace. The things that we most want, fulfillment. Things we most want are feelings. Uh-huh. And yet we insist on approaching that realm from the cerebrum. And I submit that this is one of the problems that we have. And since what I'm doing is trying to reawaken, reinflame, help people
reconnect,
you know, remember, like put the pieces together again. It's not like anybody has lost it. We've just forgotten the essential illusion surrounding us that you will see in Shakespearean dramas and myths forever and forever is that we had it. We have it, but we think we've lost it. And so now, to find the golden fleece is to find it hung somewhere on a hook in our own spirit. It's in there. The journey is inside, and the journey is much to do about feeling. And I say, as a Cancerian born on the 4th of July, I'm a crab, and I'm a feeler, and I'm proud of it. And I always know, bottom line, whenever I get in a situation and I hear people talk and I hear them spill out their nifty little spiritual egos and everything, and when the time is done, I always have a feeling sense of who that person has been or what the situation has been about. And I trust my gut instincts there, which is, I think, something that is... We need to honor more. Uh-huh. What is our gut level feeling? You know, down in our haras, down in the dantian. What is our gut saying about any given situation? What do you suppose the guts of those primitives were feeling on that island?
Mm-hmm. Do you
think that they just sat there and a little white light came down into their head and they had a revelation and they had a vision and saw themselves going? I don't think so. That may have happened for some of them, but I would be willing to guess, to bet that, you know, these primitives felt it. Mm-hmm. They felt, they had the intimation, the pricklings, whatever, was a felt sense. Yeah. And they responded in an intelligent way in an intelligent way to the feeling that they got in their interpretation and their action. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I just wanted to digress just for a moment, but I'm not really digress because, the heart of things, what I had on the mountain when the Christ came and blessed me was a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It was a feeling that was imbued with light. It was a radiant feeling of love, of rightness, of well-being, of exaltation. I wish we could see feelings, you know, elevated again now to a higher level, right up to the heart. Let's have that happen. And maybe we can downgrade from the mind. We can downgrade a little bit, drop into the heart, some of the people who are into survival mode can upgrade a little bit into the heart where trust mm-hmm. can begin mm-hmm. in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. if we can live at the center of who mm-hmm. we are, because if you stand up and put your arms out and ask, if all roads lead to Rome, where's Rome in our bodies? And you'll find that the Rome is right there in your heart. That's where all the roads lead to, if you follow it.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Yep.
I'm doing
right,
it now.
Right in there. Right there.
Stretching the hand, yep. the arms out.
So, and in our
there you go.
In our morphology.
A little bit higher.
In our morphology, the way we have been designed, and just that they sent out on Voyager. Remember, they sent that the picture of the human being standing out. Mm, and
yes,
like,
yes,
you know,
with his
and
hands
we sent them out there, you know, and then they didn't tell them. You know, the extraterrestrials will see that. Oh, look at that! Obviously, all roads lead to Rome. This is a heart centered race. Let's go see what. And they get here and they see we're armed to the teeth, ready to destroy ourselves. You know, with nuclear annihilation and everything. So
here we go.
They haven't quite remembered who they are yet, see? So
no, I think we've been quarantined.
Yes.
Rightly so.
So anyway, I wanted to make that pitch for feelings. So this is actually a great day. And they go, oh, a man talking about feelings. Can you believe that?
Yes, I can. In the shape of...
Let's keep it spreading it. Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Especially that Christ consciousness thing.
Yes. Boy, that... I was befuddled when I first, and then I was talking to another friend who's very much Hindu, and he said, mm-hmm. I just had a lesson in Hindus for Jesus. And I said, oh, something's going around all over. I'd like to hear that poem about the river, if you could read it. I don't remember the name of it. I read the Sacred River.
Yes. I even have, most of my poems are like, you know, sacred, and like the sacred pizza, you know, it's all sacred. And let's see if I can find that one. Ah, there it is.
I think it's 26.
Okay.
Here it is.
So, this is a poem about how the journey is and how we can be with the journey. Okay?
Yep, that's...
The Sacred River. Who knows the majesty of the Sacred River? To watch it. To consider it, to explain it, this is one thing. But to enter it, to be embraced by it, to be swept along by it, this is an entirely different matter. And what of the impulse to enter? What is the attraction, unless we are sacred rivers ourselves, composed of the same dynamics? And here is the immutable principle written across all water. All rivers return to the source. Mm. And like the water which always responds toward the lowest point, I feel a pull in my fluid core toward some ineffable destination.
Mm.
As I enter the river, I can feel it gather me and carry me. The voyage has begun. The current is taking me home. But I can't see around the next bend. The river twists and writhes like a giant liquid snake, full of surprises. To make this journey, I too must bend. I must trust that around the next bend, the river continues, and that I will find my way through. I have my boat, and within the banks of the river I move. I position myself, I explore, I can even stop. Maybe I'll pull up on a sandy beach and lie in the sun for a while, listening to the wondrous sounds of the wind, the water, and the birds. Or maybe I'll slip over the side of the boat, in midstream, and just float along with the current, feeling the immense yet cradling power of moving water. More and more, I am becoming one with its flow. And the river is insistent. Nothing can stop it. It will find a way through, even if it must call upon the heavens to send its strength through a deluge of rain. It will become full, swollen, and tempestuous, and not even solid rock can block its way. And I am like this too. Determined to overcome all obstacles in my way. I don't get caught up in the brush near the shore. I don't let fallen trees and branches catch or puncture me. Here I am using my wits and senses to navigate, to stay in the flow, to continue my journey. I am exploring the river as I go, getting to know its temperament and special qualities every day. I watch the shoreline, noticing the wildlife, enjoying the ducks, the deers, herons, and eagles that live and thrive here. And every day the river brings me new experiences. I live for adventure, for I have nothing to cling to, nothing to defend, no investments or possessions to guard. I am free, and this comes from a very deep place of seeing and choosing. I am free. I transmute what would have been fear into excitement for the journey, and the child within rejoices, for both of us have returned to a place of curiosity and playfulness, while at the same time honoring the impulses toward maturity. As I learn to navigate the uncertainties of the river, I continue to feel its incessant pull. As I respond to the pull, I learn to listen more closely to the subtle voice of the river. More and more we are becoming one. Any idea of a goal has simply dissolved in the water that is all around me. Hmm. Now I watch, I feel, and I move into harmony with what is inside and with what is outside. There is no paradox, for every day I reach a confluence with other tributaries of experience. They all become absorbed by the river and its movement and its sacredness and its greatness. Ever flowing, ever growing, ever knowing, now I smell the salt on the breeze. I spy a phalanx of gulls in the distance. Soon the river will meet the sea. But before I can draw conclusions, the voice of the river whispers, "This journey is never ending."
Thank you. That poem kept coming to mind after I read them. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to hear you read that.
It seems to encapsulate everything we've been talking
does.
About.
Today. Right. Yeah, I was
thank you.
Feeling
yes. What another thinking prophetic off. Moment.
Oh. <It's enough. laughs> Thank you. Were you sitting by a river when you wrote it, or was this just did this just come to you? And
I've been river rafting the Snake River in Wyoming.
Oh.
And so everything I saw there was captured in the poem. And, you know, there was some distillation that happened because, you know, all has as the way I am as a poet, I find that I'm deeply impressed by things. And then there's this kind of mysterious distillation and organization of thought and words, images that eventually comes out on paper. And sometimes they come out. The poems will come out absolutely intact and with no changes. But this one I have played with some.
A little bit of fine-tuning.
Well, because I wanted to make it bigger.
And
I mean, it's the river, but it's all of life. It's a metaphor for life. Uh-huh. So
it
I wanted it to
is.
Be able to contain the universal. And my poetry is that way. I try to capture something of the universal. Now, the listener gets to fill it in with their own experience. They get to color it and put texture on it, maybe put some feathers in there in their own imagination. But the place that I'm trying to capture is the essential truth that is somehow we all share that triggers something in us where we say, aha, yes, I have recognition. Mm-hmm. How do we do that? I mean, this is amazing. Dolphins, they do it all the time. But for us, and we do it all the time, but we don't seem to really get how special it is as a part of our capacity to commune that we share these things.
Well, poetry, your poetry cuts through any barriers to that. That's why I kept going back to that poem. I read it when I was working, and then the next day I was riding on the bus somewhere, and I picked it up to reconnect with that.
Yeah.
It's just, it's very powerful. We have about 10 minutes left, so if you could indulge me, I know you were resistant at first, and talk a little bit about the stars and astrologically what's going on now.
Oh boy, you could really do a whole program on this, and I'm totally willing to do it again.
Well, but yes, what would be what you feel?
I'll just give you. I'll
give you what we've been talking about. And
well, I'm going to switch gears a little bit because the institutional. Well,
what?
Okay, this revelations and disclosures that's been happening regarding the Catholic Church, okay, and the treatment of small children, crimes committed against small children over a 50-year period of time. This revelation had begun in 2008 and up in Oregon, and had visited the United States. What has happened now is the revelation is worldwide. Okay. What we have in... astrologically, I'm just going to pick this one example, and you guys can do the research on it, okay? Because it's easier to track when it begins to emerge, okay? So here's the example. Right now, we still have Uranus opposition Saturn, okay? And that's forming this polarity here. And what we have is Pluto coming in to square both of those planets, okay?
What does that mean?
Okay, so what that means is that I'm going to just relate it to one instance now, okay? Because I don't want to stretch people too far. I want them to get this, okay? The tension between the welfare of the people and the abuse, covert abuse, a priest were doing to young children, that tension as a poison has been in the subterraneans of the Catholic Church now for many years, circulating around covert way, poisoning, traumatizing. Do you know what it takes for someone who has been sexually traumatized at an early age to overcome that? I told you I was a mess. This is nothing compared to it, what I experienced. This is nothing. There are thousands and tens of thousands of people who are scarred forever because of what has happened. Okay? Saturn in Pisces represents the church hierarchy of the Piscean Age. We're trying to work something out that's lingering from the Piscean Age, the hegemony of church organizations. Uranus, on the other hand, in Virgo, is the concern of the community, of the people, for their health and well-being in Virgo, their health and well-being. These have been at odds now for well over a year. But what accounts for the current revelation? Because Pluto has come in to square both of them. Pluto releases the truth. One of the things about Pluto, it has to do with sexuality. It has to do with perverted forms of sexuality. It also has to do with the regeneration and growth of the caterpillar and the butterfly transformation. Okay? So so what has happened is that the energy bound up in the opposition of Saturn and Uranus has now found an outlet through Pluto. Okay? Pluto and Capricorn. Church structure is going to change. There is a tremendous challenge. Just watch what happens. Over here on the Iranian side, you have the call of the masses of the people. No, we don't want to be treated like, we don't want our children to be treated like this. The reason, there's two reasons why people, I'm not a churchgoer, but there's two reasons why people go to church. They learned it. That's what they've always been doing. And the other thing is that somehow the church embodies their values and their spiritual goals, their aspirations. When you compromise that, it is greater than anything you can do to the flesh. And the church is going to suffer tremendously from that. And there's going to have to be something that changes and that emerges that's different, that's appropriate to the Aquarian age, where you get feedback and participation by the whole community. It's a community church. It's not a hierarchical church. It's not a church just run by old men and deviants. Okay? So I want you to look, to think about where the release point is going to be in the polarities that we're experiencing right now, in the oppositional forces that are in our culture. Let me tell you, the prospect of our president being assassinated because of the manipulation that's going on symbolically, you know, to light a match to the lunatic flammable people that are out there. Okay? I hate to say it, but this is, the groundwork is being laid. Just in the last few days, now the Justice Department is going after some of these people and charging them. The people that are calling up Pelosi and different people, they're going after them. But it's, let me tell you, it's fueled. Just as insidious as what the Catholic hierarchy, all the way up to the Pope, who at before he was the Pope, he was in charge of morals. And it looks like he ended up being part of this whole system, too, that rationalized and covered for these guys.
He did.
Okay?
And he still is.
All right. So if you want to know the confluence and the meaning of these abstract astrological symbols, I'm pointing to those right now for you. The release point through Pluto, volcanic eruptions, because Pluto is the god
and
of the underworld.
Earthquakes we've been having.
Earthquakes, the ring of fire.
The ring of fire.
You know, and plus we have Uranus involved too. It's very flammable, okay? Very unpredictable. So, but you can look at a lot of this in the way it's having its effect on structure, organizational structure, and also on people's aspirations and how they feel, their sense of hopefulness or hopelessness. And this is also a current that's happening in our country, in this democratic, supposedly democratic country. If the people in this country begin to lose hope that life is too much of a struggle, then there's going to be changes in this country. And I don't mean Tea Party people, although some of these people haven't been politically active. They're just very angry. But if where the country is going is not, you know, in alignment with how people feel in terms of their hopefulness and their values, then we will have changes. And so as we started the program and I asked people, you know, please work on yourself so that you can become a better listener. You want to see where the trigger points are, where energy is going to be released. And I have to say, right now, I live at 2,750 feet elevation. You know, tsunamis could affect this community here tremendously. And I also have to put out to it, and when I was in Hawaii, I got evacuated because of a tsunami. A tsunami in Chile killed many, many people.
Right.
So, you know, living, part of reassessing, you know, where you are and where you would like to be is about that proximity to the ocean. If the grandmother ocean starts to kick up her heels, she's going to create new shorelines. And people that are close to that, just like with that tsunami back in, you know, in Asia, you know, it showed us stuff too. So, I mean, we could do a whole program on
Tiger, and we will. We definitely will. But before we, I'm going to put on Palestinian news in a moment. Do you have a website?
Yes.
And can you Google that?
Yes.
What is it?
So, tigerwindwalker.com. Please go and check out the website. And you can also email me at tiger@tigerwindwalker.com. But I want to say that on the 24th, of April, if I get at least 8 signups,
okay,
on the 24th of April, I will take people on a walk in beauty out at Año Nuevo Park. So if somebody's interested, and I will give you my phone number, okay, so this means it's direct to me, 831-238-1328, and we'll do it all day, $25 a person, all day long, and we'll get out and reconnect with ourselves and with the beautiful web of life.
And light the passions.
Yes. So give me a call if you want to do that. If I get at least 8 people on the 24th of April, which is a Saturday, that's only 2 days after Earth Day, we'll go out and I'll show you a beautiful place. And
I'll try to be there. I have to look at my...
Is it going to be like from morning until afternoon?
What we'll do is maybe rendezvous in Santa Cruz, drive out there, convoy out there, hopefully, and get there by... You know, it's like if we rendezvous at like 8 or 8:30, and then we can get there by 9:30, and then all walk out. And
I'd love to write poetry with you, too.
Yes. And this is a beautiful... It's my best friend's favorite spot. And it's this time of the year, there are many wildflowers around.
Plus
the oceans.
We'll go.
The ubiquitous elephant seal. But not in the state park. We're off to the side, so we can do our
own thing. This is very unusual. Tiger does not usually offer himself up in this way. Something has struck you. I really want to thank you, Tiger, and all of you listeners for listening. And we've been listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and this has been Tickling the Belly of the Beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz. And it's time for Palestinian News.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Tuesday, April 6, 2010. Palestinian workers go missing in a tunnel collapse near the Gaza-Egypt borders, while Israeli troops detain civilians in the West Bank. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Two Palestinian workers went missing as a tunnel at the southern Gaza Strip borders collapsed on them on Tuesday. Palestinian media sources said that the tunnel is located at the Yibna camp for Palestinian refugees in Rafah City. 6 workers got trapped under the rubble when the tunnel collapsed. Later, 4 managed to get out from the Egyptian side, while 2